baseball, Blue Jays, and more baseball. It's the walk-off with Scott Belford and Adam Mack.
This ball is crushed.
The Die Hard Podcast for the casual fan.
And another one. My goodness.
Well, good morning and welcome to the walk-off, everybody. I'm Scott Belford, joined as always by the best co-host in the biz, Adam Mack. And we are here, 162 games complete, sir.
We did it.
And if you look back on last year around this time, it was heartbreak, it was sadness, it was looking at a 91 win team and realizing that the year is over. And boy, what a better feeling.
Yeah, 92 wins feels so much better than 91. Yeah.
And we're going to see some home playoff games. Of course, the Seattle Mariners are going to be coming to town, coming to Toronto. And folks are pumped, man. There's a lot of... I've been getting texts from all my buddies in Toronto that are like, oh my God, I can't believe it's here. We're actually getting some playoff baseball. Scott already in chat here singing the Let's Go Blue Jays, right? Yeah. You got nine men. You got a hat. And a bat.
The whole thing. He's got the emojis in it and everything.
Yeah, he's got the emojis and everything. He's exactly. Pumped. So a few things coming up on the show here. We are going to give some love to some unsung heroes. We're going to get into Anthony Bass and what a boon he has been in the back end of this Blue Jays bullpen. We are going to go over the MLB rankings. They released their pitching and their fielding ranks, and the Blue Jays look pretty good. And I mean, Adam and I just did this kind of, sort of. Oh. We tried to do this yesterday.
What a disaster that was.
We had bailed on doing the full thing because it is way more work than we had originally anticipated. And a big tip of the hat to all the content creators out there who make lists and comb through the stats and get to know every single guy on every single team, because it is a way bigger endeavor than we could have possibly imagined. But we actually saw these MLB rankings, and we were kind of on par with where they should be, which made me feel good, you know? Like, we tried really hard not to be biased. And, yeah, it's nice to see MLB agreeing with where we rank the Blue Jays.
There you go. You know what it felt like, honestly? It felt like it was one of our first real fortes into that kind of content. And I felt like the dumb kid who's, like, going into grade 10, and he's like, all right, this is the year I'm going to get straight A's. And then the first day gets the big assignment and goes, yeah, this was a bad idea. Like, I'm not that guy. That was us. All right. We got 100%. A special guest joining us in, what, 10, 15 minutes, too?
10 minutes. We've got Juan Forno, the very funny comedian. He's played some ball in his day. And big Mariners fan. He's currently living in Seattle doing stand-up comedy there. So we are going to have him on the show just to talk about what the atmosphere is like in Seattle. This is the first time that this Mariners team has made the playoffs in almost, well, not almost, in 21 years. The only team who had a longer playoff drought in recent memory, the Toronto Blue Jays. Back in 2015, it took 22 years to end their playoff drought. So, yeah, we're going to be joined by Juan in about 10 minutes here. Adam, let's start with this playoff roster. And if you think Gabriel Moreno is going to be a member of this Blue Jays team come Friday.
Yeah, I think he is. I'm just going to say it.
I think so, too. I think they are going to carry three catchers. I don't think they necessarily would like to. I think that what's going to happen here is Lourdes Gurriel Jr. isn't going to be ready to play, and I don't think if that's the case, they're going to use a roster spot to have him sit on the bench.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. Maybe things change for the divisional series, but yeah, I think this round, and things might change. Maybe Moreno, I don't know what the right answer is. The argument for Moreno is that it is nice to have the third catcher, the way the Blue Jays play with Jansen and Kirk both in the lineups. You need them. We know that. We've been talking about it all year. This is a problem that they were going to run into. What did you think of him playing left field the other day?
It was really interesting to
watch. The whole doubleheader. Did you watch it? What was your takeaway from that yesterday day?
I actually really enjoyed that doubleheader. It was like watching a completely different Blue Jays team. It was absolutely hilarious.
You know what it felt like? It felt like at the end of the hockey season when it's like kids versus parents at practice. You know, it's like, well, all of our games are done. We have one ice time left. Let's get out there and just mess around, right? So Moreno played all over the park.
Yeah.
Left field, second base, third base.
Man, the fact that they, when they pulled Jansen from the game, or sorry, who was it they pulled from the game there? Bo Bichette. And then had to move guys around, and all of a sudden Moreno goes from left field to second base mid-game. Never played second base in the majors before. He hadn't played left field in the majors before. I just like that in these inconsequential games that John Schneider was prepared to give him a go and just see what he felt like. Just let him feel it out in general. Yeah. There's no way they do this with Moreno in a playoff game. I don't think we're going to see Moreno come off the bench to play left field or anything crazy like that.
It would just be like an emergency, I think. Like they got, or maybe a deep extra innings game that goes like 13, 14 innings. Remember, there's no Manfred runner in the postseason. Yeah. So there is the potential for a weird game to go long. And you could see a situation where he's just in. And I guess it's good to know that he can play left field and you just hope it's not hit to him. But I mean, he's a freak athlete too, right? Like,
he really is incredibly athletic, but one thing to keep in mind with the carrying a third catcher, one of the reasons the Blue Jays would do this is because they are going to be using Alejandro Kirk at the DH position for all three games. I think obviously he's going to catch for Manoa. They've been a battery mate 29 of the 30 games that Manoa has pitched, I think it's something like that. Like, they've been together almost every single time. I mean,
they only have another, 200 or 300 to catch
Molina, only another 300 to catch Molina and Waino. Yeah.
They're on their way.
So, I mean, you look at the way things are going to line up. Kirk even caught Manoa in the All-Star game. Manoa's going to go game one. I mean, things are lined up and ready to go. I'm excited to see what happens here because there are some decisions that still need to be made, and the Blue Jays are not going to announce this full roster until tomorrow morning. I guarantee they're going to wait right till I think it's 10 a.m. Eastern when they need to put in the solidified final roster. And I don't think we're going to know till then. And there could be some surprises on there. There truly could be some surprises. We'll see how they value certain guys on this 26-man roster. Is Bradley Zimmer going to take a spot? Possibly. He could be a surprise, too, in that he doesn't get a spot.
I'd be fine with that. Juan Forno's in the waiting room, so let's get to him. Because I know he's only got so many minutes for us. So
that's right.
What up?
Mr. Forno, hello.
How you guys doing?
Good, man. Good. Thank you so much for taking the time to join us, buddy. Really appreciate it. Of course, you got your Mariners hat on, ready to go, eh?
It's technically a Steelheads hat, but it's a Seattle hat.
Okay, there you go. Just misreading that S there. That's right. All right, everybody. Welcome to the show, Juan Forno, comedian based out of Seattle. And, buddy, I just we had to get you on the show here because, obviously, the Mariners killed the longest playoff drought in professional sport history this year. They had been 21 years. This is crazy to me to even think that there's 21-year-old kids out there that have never seen the Mariners in the playoffs, you know, that had cheered for the Mariners their whole life.
That's funny because I have friends here, comedians and stuff here that have kids that are like you guys have no idea what it's like for the Mariners to be in the playoffs. And it's wild because if you think back, the last time the Mariners made the playoffs was in Ichiro's rookie season where they won 116 games. Yeah. Ichiro's just a rookie. So everything is looking like roses going forward.
Hope through the roof.
Haven't been back since.
Unreal. What is the feeling in Seattle? Can you feel it? Is there an energy to the city now?
Yeah. Oh, they're excited. I know like the team stumbled a little bit down the stretch there, especially getting to close out the season with, you know, Oakland and the Angels and the Tigers and still managed to lose a couple of those games.
Well, I know truly even 20 games ago, I mean, if you looked at Tampa Bay's, Toronto's and Seattle's schedule coming to the end of the season, the Mariners did have the softest schedule, and we were all tied. All three teams were tied, and I remember being like, "We're gonna wind up, we're gonna wind up in that second wild card spot and going to Seattle." But no, it wound up. How is the feeling in Seattle going to Toronto for this team?
I think it's weird because for me, I don't like the fact that they stumbled into the playoffs, but it seems like everybody's just so excited that it's happening that they're content almost. For me, I wish they weren't playing the Blue Jays right off the bat, but I don't want them to just make the playoffs. I want them to get past this round so that there's some home games in Seattle and to actually see how far they can go. And I mean, with that pitching staff, it's not unrealistic to think that they could beat anybody on any given series, but they got to put it together for sure. The city is excited, but I want them to be more excited about the expectations. I want them to have more expectations than just getting in to the playoffs. That's just not good enough for me.
The scariest part about the Mariners is those top three starting pitchers.
Like, yeah.
You line them up against almost anyone's top three, and they are right there comparable, if not better. Like Luis Castillo starting game one, especially with the right-handed heavy lineup that is the Toronto Blue Jays. And Luis is like, has he surprised you? Like, obviously, we all knew he was a very good pitcher, but he kind of gets forgotten in Cincinnati. When he came to Seattle, you were at his first game, right?
I was, And it was such a funny thing because, you know, everybody highly regarded him, and obviously the cost to get him was through the roof, you know, prospect one, three, and five. But when you actually go and watch him pitch, you're like, oh, shit, like, this guy is legit. Like, and he has been. He's been one of those rare midseason trade acquisitions that didn't disappoint. If anything, he's exceeded expectations up to this point. And you know,
incredibly impressive to see the front office do a very similar move that the Jays did last year with Jose Berríos, where they spent big time prospect capital, but then they locked him up, man. Like Luis Castillo is an M for the next 5 years.
5 years. And on like a pretty, considering how much pitchers are getting paid right now, like I think that's a very team friendly deal in my opinion. It's amazing what
stays healthy. It's an incredible deal.
Totally. I think a big factor in that was going from a team like Cincinnati that doesn't, you know, it's not a major market. It's not a team that has really excelled over the last couple of years. Rest in peace, Joey Votto. But to come to Seattle and be in the thick of, you know, a playoff push and, you know, the history of not being able to make the playoffs and being surrounded by a young, fun team, you know, guys like J.P. Crawford and Julio Rodriguez, I think that makes it a lot of fun. And I think Luis Castillo probably recognized that and wanted to stick around for that reason.
What is so insane, too, is that talk about just getting under the wire for Robbie Ray. Like this vaccination policy in Canada that has literally stopped so many players on American teams from coming into Toronto throughout this season. Yeah. And to watch how much the Yankees put a premium on making sure that everyone was vaxxed, and to watch some of these AL East teams really go out of their way to make sure that anyone that they signed, Toronto included, obviously vaccinated. And I think it's one of the big reasons why Robbie Ray went west and didn't wind up signing in Toronto, where they just signed Kevin Gausman for literally almost the exact same amount of money, right? So
yeah. And I feel like that probably worked out for Toronto. I think Gausman had a better season overall.
He probably has. I mean, Ray has really turned it on. Do you think now that Robbie Ray can come to Toronto, a Ray-Gausman matchup in game two,
that would be
pretty darn cool, right?
I would love to see that. And who's to say it wouldn't line up? Like, I think it's probably going to be Castillo-Manoah, in my opinion. And then, yeah, it's probably – you probably go Robbie Ray and Gausman up next. I mean, the Mariners are not going to go Logan Gilbert until game three, I think.
Why is that, do you think?
He's just a rookie. He's a kid.
Yeah.
You know, in that pressure situation, game three, clinching game, you know, do you go with the guy that just won a Cy Young or do you go with a rookie? I mean,
yeah,
probably going to go with a Cy Young guy. And that's not a knock on Logan Gilbert. That's not to say he doesn't have it. He had a great season. But yeah, I'm going to, in that moment, I'm going to go with a Cy Young award winner.
What is the attitude in Seattle towards your young prospects? I mean, obviously, Julio Rodriguez had a phenomenal season. Everybody remembers the home run derby, the coming out party there. But like a guy like Jared Kelenic, right, who kind of made his debut last year. There's a lot of hype, was one of the top prospects, struggled, got sent back down. Is there pressure on him from the fan base? Or is there disappointment, frustration? What's going on there?
Yeah, it really is a case-by-case situation. Obviously, the golden child is Julio. That is the face of the franchise immediately. When it comes to Kelenic, it's very, very night and day in comparison. You know, he was supposed to be that guy, and he never really excelled to that point. I know opening day, I was at opening day this year, and when you walk into the stadium, there's the banners of all the players that, you know, are expected to carry your team. You know, Robbie Ray, Julio Rodriguez, and the other guy was Jared Kelenic. And obviously he struggled. He got sent down. He spent most of the season in AAA, which he raked. He put up massive numbers in AAA. And it was cool to see him get that September call up and actually hit decently. I think
Is he going to be on the playoff roster?
I don't think so, man. I don't think so. He was kind of just filling in for Julio while he was on that 10-day stretch. But then again, Sam Haggerty just went down with an injury. So he actually might, if it wasn't for that Haggerty injury, I think he probably would have been left off. But
how big of a loss was that Haggerty loss? He's kind of an underrated, like glue piece to that team, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I think he's going to be, that wild card that could have made the difference in the series. You know, he's a guy that you could go and he's fast. He can run
super fast. Yeah.
So, you know, in a situation where, you know, you're down by one or a tie game in the ninth and you got a runner on first, like that's who would be, right? You know, you can pinch run him for like a Yoenis Suarez or Ty France, Cal Raleigh. And now that you lose that piece.
It was an ugly injury too, you know, like you could tell right away as soon as he slid into that base and just toppled over and the pain in his face, you were just like, okay, a groin injury going into the playoffs. Like that's the thing with a groin injury. Like, you don't know. It could be a week. He could literally come back in the division series, but he could also be done for the season. Like,
reports said he's going to miss two series. So he'll miss a wild card in the divisional. But it's a groin. It's, you know, soft tissue. You never really know. And I mean, especially where his game is, you know, defense and running and, you know, high average kind of hitter. He's got to be able to run or else there's, you know, his value diminishes completely.
Scott Servais, how do you feel about him at the helm?
Yeah, I mean, he's the guy. I think he's going to be around a long time.
The team seems to really have his back.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. I think it seems like the team loves him. And he seems to love the guys. Like they have that energy. I don't know if you remember when the Blue Jays made the wild card as a young team. I think it was like Vladdy and Boz.
Yeah.
They had that same kind of energy and excitement around them. That's kind of the same feeling in Seattle now for sure.
How do you feel about his bullpen management late in the game? Do you trust that he's going to go to the right guy at the right time?
That's tricky, you know. Once upon a time, they had like a 1.8 ERA, and that they could do no wrong. But there's been a lot of stumbles this last month. I don't know if it's, you know, fatigue in that bullpen or what the situation is. They got a lot of great arms. Munoz is, you know, lights out, and Seawald had a very good season up until recently. I like to believe that the pitching was a strong point all season, and I believe they'll step up when it matters. You know, they got the right arms, and I feel like Scott could go any which way, 7, 8, 9. And he also has, you know, Kirby, who can be a long reliever because they're only going to go with three starters. You know,
they've had a few guys just show up too, like Canadian kid there, Matt Brash, who was kind of slotted as a possible starter at the beginning of the season. But man, like, the kid has an arm. Like, I was watching him the other day. He's hit 99 every time he throws a fastball.
Yeah, Brash was supposed to be a starter, and I think that's still the plan for the future for him. Yeah. It's just it's a control issue is what it is there. You know, he was walking 6-7 guys a start, and, you know, a couple outings where he would walk four people in a row. So if he can get those control issues down, then I think he has a bright future as a starter, and otherwise, you know, he can be that 7th, 8th inning guy that you know, goes in and, you know, Ricky Vaughn's it a little bit.
Well, honestly, Juan, thank you so much for taking the time, buddy. I know you're at work right now and that you've made an exception, but no, we really appreciate it, buddy. All the best. And, you know, any other scenario, I would say best of luck to the Mariners, but I can't.
No worries. I appreciate you guys having me on. This is a lot of fun. I love talking baseball, and I'm sure, you know, Scott, you and I are going to talk a lot of shit over this weekend.
We'll be texting and taunting and all sorts of stuff. Absolutely, man. All the best, buddy. Enjoy your weekend. We'll talk soon.
Cheers, guys.
All right. Cheers.
That's Juan Forno. He's a comedian based out of Seattle, joining us just to kind of give us the feeling in Seattle of a freshly minted playoff team for the first time in over 2 decades.
It's exciting stuff.
Man, let's get into showing some love for a guy that, and I'm going to bring his name up and people are going to be like, why are we talking Casey Lawrence? But I honestly want to talk Casey Lawrence really quickly here. This is a man who's 35 years old. He has played within the Blue Jays system on and off since 2012. He has been more or less a career minor league player. He has pitched in numerous organizations. Last time he was in the big leagues playing games was 2018 with the Seattle Mariners. The Jays, and we, Adam and I, have talked about this substantially over the season, that the biggest Achilles heel that this team has had is insular depth at the AAA level. Mm-hmm. That there hasn't really been anybody other than Max Castillo that we saw earlier in the year. And I think one of the reasons we watched Max Castillo get moved at the trade deadline was that Casey Lawrence probably had more... the organization had more trust in Casey Lawrence than maybe a lot of us had originally anticipated, and not even so much with being able to come up and contribute long-term to the Blue Jays, but be able to do things like he did last night, which was come in and just give them innings when they desperately needed innings. Listen, there's more to Casey Lawrence than just that as well, okay? This is a dude that every single pitcher in this organization sings his praises. I know when we had Matt Gage on the show a couple of times, Gage went out of his way to talk about what a great influence Casey Lawrence was in the bullpen in AAA, how much he took so many of these young pitchers under his wing. Selfless. Casey Lawrence is selfless, and that's what you got to be if you're going to be a career minor league player. Casey Lawrence has had his cup of coffee, but he's never going to be a guy that is probably a full-time major league player. And the way that he has instilled the experience on these young guys coming up, and I'm not saying that Matt Gage is young, but, you know, like, just on these guys that are younger than him that maybe don't have the same amount of experience with the game, It's been very impressive. A very selfless dude. So just a tip of the hat there to Casey Lawrence. Great job covering up your sneeze, by the way. For those of you listening on audio, Adam seamlessly hit the mute button.
Thanks.
Just a consummate pro.
You know me. You know me. The impressive thing is not that I muted my mic for the sneeze. It's that I turned it back on when I came back.
Yes.
That's where the real skill. That's where we separate the men from the boys. All right. Speaking of Blue Jays pitchers that we want to highlight, it's my turn now.
Yeah.
I know I texted you this last night, so we can't pretend that I'm going to surprise you here with some impressive stats.
You guessed it anyways.
Last five games, here's the stat line. A whip of 0.6, an ERA of 2.16, 15 Ks per nine, and 2.16 walks per nine. Name that Blue Jays pitcher.
And you guessed it. The Blue Jays pitcher with a whip of 0.66. Think about that, gang. That is an incredible whip for a guy coming out of the bullpen.
Ks per nine, 15.12.
This sounds like a stud elite back end of the bullpen arm.
This is incredible. This is a guy you want pitching in the playoffs for you, right?
If you have not guessed yet, we are speaking, of course, of the Blue Jays' big acquisition in the offseason, Yusei Kikuchi.
Yusei Kikuchi. Finished the season strong.
Very strong.
Still don't want to see him pitch in the playoffs, but it is...
These are low leverage innings, but he sure has looked good.
Maybe it's a reason to be optimistic about next season. Can we say that? It's a reason...
It's a reason for him
to not cry all off season and be like, all right, look, there's something here, and be like with a little bit of confidence going into next season.
And you know what? It has put an asterisk next to his name when it comes to the playoff roster. He's a bubble guy. He's put himself in the conversation. I know we talked about this with Ben Nicholson-Smith. He brought up the fact that Yusei Kikuchi very well could be on this playoff roster. More so as insurance in case something, let's say game two, things go completely terribly, knock on all the wood, and whoever's pitching in that game two blows up. And it's, I think how Ben said it was, it's a million to nothing. Yeah, or 100 to nothing, right? Like, it's, you know, like where it's just like the game is gone and it's time to refocus on that deciding game three.
Right. Save your bullpen for tomorrow.
It saves your bullpen. And I think that after looking at what Mitch White has done since joining this team at the trade deadline, which has basically put up an 8 ERA and even in the lowest leverage of situations get blown up here and there. Yusei Kikuchi might be the better option, and I think he probably is. Whether this team feels that they need that protection or not, we'll need to wait and see. Again, 10 a.m. tomorrow Eastern time, we'll figure out. But
in the meantime,
you look at Yusei's numbers over the last 2 weeks. Can't ask for more.
Not bad. Hasn't allowed a run in his last four games. So there you go.
John Schneider. Turns out that was the right move, eh?
Tough to argue at this point.
It's pretty tough to argue. He has really impressed me in that interim manager position. He has done everything right. Let's just take a look at the win-loss column. So when Charlie Montoyo left, that's a nice way of saying it. When Charlie Montoyo was so generously showing the door and he left.
Yes, when he resigned, when he said, you know what, I'm better than this, I don't need you, and left the Blue Jays. July 13th was just after an ugly trip to Seattle.
Very ugly.
Blue Jays had a record of 46 and 42. They were four games above 500. Winning percentage, 523. They were on pace for 85 wins. Now, if I look at my MLB standings here, that is not good enough to get us in the playoffs.
No, it is not. And you'll remember, listen, we're not saying that this was all on Charlie. Obviously, at the time, the offense was scuffling to a disastrous level. All of us were pulling our hair out, because if there's one thing about this team, it's that offense has always been a strong point. I mean, the way the roster was constructed, it was constructed to mash and maybe make up for a few pitching holes here and there. And we'll get into this a little bit more. I know MLB has just released their rankings of lineups and pitchers. And just to put it in perspective, the Blue Jays, and we'll go more in depth, but the Blue Jays were ranked number 2 out of the 12 playoff teams, behind only the Dodgers, when it comes to their lineup and the way that they are going to hit, right? Their offense is a top 2 offense out of all the playoff teams. Pitching was ranked 11 out of 12. Now, it's still a good pitching staff. It just goes to show you how good the pitching gets once you get to the playoffs. The Mariners were ranked 8th, just to put it in perspective.
Yeah, I'd have to really think about this, but is there a better pitching staff that missed the playoffs? You know what I'm saying? Like, are the 12 best pitching staffs all playoff teams?
I think it pretty much lined up that
probably
way.
Probably pretty close, if not.
It's pretty darn close. Or at least there, you can make a few arguments for those 11 and 12, like the last two teams there. But so what I'm saying is, this isn't all on Charlie Montoyo, but wow, what a turnaround. Because John Schneider, obviously, with them finishing at 92 wins, was on a much better pace than an 85 win.
So John Schneider, since he took over, Blue Jays are 46 and 28. That is 18 games above 500, obviously in a lot fewer games. Winning percentage, 622. That is a pace of 101 wins, which the Yankees finished the season with 99 wins. Mm-hmm. So,
and I think the big differences with what John Schneider has done is the way he has managed the bullpen. And obviously the front office went out and bolstered the pen with Anthony Bass, Zach Pop, just adding some more high leverage choices goes a long way. But I also just think that the way that John Schneider has managed the bullpen was much better. You know, I noticed it myself, but I heard it on Blair and Barker this morning. And one of the things that they brought up was just the fact that when Charlie was managing this bullpen, you would see him get two guys up at a time.
Yeah.
And kind of roll with, you know, not really be decisive, where John Schneider has been incredibly decisive. I know, and listen, there are some big-time Charlie detractors. I know our good friend in chat here, Taco Time, who's been a longtime supporter of the walk-off here, he says, of course it was on Charlie, good riddance. And there's a lot of people that feel that way. And it may be the case. We'll need to wait and see. If Charlie Montoyo does not get another sniff at the manager job, then that goes a long way to say what the rest of the league felt about his ability to manage. But I was really on the fence if John Schneider was the guy, because you hear all of the talk within the front office of collaboration. It's a collaborative effort. And so when you take the team that was under Charlie Montoyo, you would think that it was all a very collaborative thing, but we're kind of getting the sense that, you know what, maybe there are more responsibilities on this Blue Jays manager than we had originally thought. I know Adam used the term puppet a lot, right? And where we even both were like, what does it even matter who's managing? All of this is coming from the guys upstairs in the khakis anyways.
Charlie Montoyo pitched part of four seasons for the Toronto Blue Jays. Can you guess what his record was? Just give me like a plus or minus 500.
Okay, sorry. Say that again.
Charlie Montoyo.
Yeah.
Managed for this Blue Jays team for parts of four seasons, right? Three and a half seasons, basically. Can you tell me or guess what his record was. Wins and losses. Give me 500 plus or minus. Like five games over, 20 games under.
I'm going to guess 500. Like
you nailed it. You nailed
really?
It.
Really?
236 and 236. Yeah.
Wow.
So there you go. It doesn't scream, give me another job, but look, to his credit, I don't want this to become the poop on Charlie Montoya hour. Last couple seasons, like going through the COVID year, right? Playing in Buffalo and Dunedin. Those were, you know, dealing with the border restrictions and no fans in the stands. And those were choppy waters to sail through, yes, I think, to say the absolutely. Least, right? So tip of the cap and a good farewell to our good friend Papa Charlie. But as Taco Time puts it, good riddance. And
there's other, like, I know Northern Growler here in chat just said, I love how aggressive the new manager is, puts pressure on other teams. And that's another thing that we've watched is they're running far more with John Schneider at the helm. We're seeing that aggressiveness out of this team. And it's very cool to look back at the relationships that John Schneider has built throughout his decade with this Blue Jays organization. Of course, he has managed the Dunedin Blue Jays. He has managed the Fisher Cats. He has managed the Canadians. He has been entrenched in this organization. He's known Tim Mazza since 2012. Mm-hmm. Like, think about that. He has managed or been a part of Tim Mazza's life, a 30-year-old, for one-third of his life. He has been a part of Bo Bichette and Vladimir Guerrero's childhood, basically, to date.
That is no exaggeration.
And I think there's rope given to a guy who is that entrenched in your life that wouldn't be given to a guy like Charlie. A great example is when John Schneider came out and blasted Vladdy after the game that he hit that double where he admired it and then it hit off the top of the fence. And then, of course, he panicked and was like, I'm going to try and make up for my mistake right now. And then got thrown out at second by a mile.
By a mile.
Like, in your opinion, Adam, can you see Charlie Montoya after that play coming out and saying Vladdy made a mistake?
No, because it wasn't the first time Vladdy had made a mistake. And, like, Charlie had those opportunities to do so.
Yes.
Charlie wasn't that guy. I think one thing with, like, John Schneider that he brings to the table, or to the clubhouse, however you want to put it, is that, like, he does have that experience in the minor leagues with these kids. Right?
Yes.
So a lot of the managerial choices and the tactics that he has, right, whether it's moving Bo around the batting order and specifically leaving Vladdy where he is in the batting order, right?
Mm-hmm.
When to put your arm around a guy and when to poke him in the chest.
Yes.
It's not necessarily just a skill that you just breathe out. Like, it is a little bit of trial and error, I think. And he would have gone through those trials and errors in the minor leagues, through AA, through AAA, with these kids, where he's poked Vladdy in the chest, seen how he responds to it, put his arm around him, see how he responds to that, you know, and what formula in the middle. I'm getting goosebumps just thinking about it. But, like, it's all that stuff that, like, years behind the scenes of building these relationships. I know, like, when I was a kid playing sports, you know, I was not the kind of kid who would respond to, like, yelling and being put down. I was more I would respond to the coach building my confidence up and being like, hey, you're playing like shit. We know you can do better. We need you to do better. Come on, man. And that would be a lot better than, you know, have them try and make me cry in front of my teammates, right? But like some people do respond to that. So
of course, it's person to person, and it's knowing your team. And that is one thing John Schneider does very well, is know his team. Quick little correction here. It's Northern Grower. I know I was saying growler. It's Northern Grower like weed, not growler like beer. Get it right. Either way, I'm on board.
Got our priorities.
So let's shift really quickly here. We were talking about how John Schneider has operated with this bullpen and how great he has been with his bullpen decisions. Obviously, every manager, there are decisions you can take and pick it apart. But on the most, on for the most part, he has done a great job of managing this bullpen. But there's more than just the fact that he's good at managing a bullpen involved in this. And I think Anthony Bass is a big reason why it has looked that way. You know, you don't need to rely on Jimmy Garcia and Romano near as heavily in those big time situations. What it allowed to do, the acquisition of Anthony Bass at the trade deadline and Zach Pop for Jordan Groshans, was it didn't take anybody off of this roster, and it gave so much more in the bullpen for them to bump guys like Simber down, because Simber was that high leverage guy. And listen, Simber is still getting high leverage situations, but different high leverage situations, right? High leverage situations in the sixth inning, in the fifth inning coming out of the bullpen, rather than being interjected into a game in the eighth and needing to get out a lefty, which is what they were kind of using Simber for, especially when Tim Mesa was on the IL. Anthony Bass, like, he has been incredible for this team, right? And you don't need to just listen to Adam and I say it. The numbers say it.
Yeah, the numbers say it. Let's pull up his stats here. There we go. Magic of television. Stats are now beside me, Scott. You just got to take my word for it.
Okay.
So we've got his total for the season here. We've got his time with Miami, the Marlins, and his time with Toronto down below. So he has not been as good in Toronto as he was with Miami, but still very good numbers. Obviously, Toronto is a hitter-friendly ballpark, so that's something to take into consideration. But whip around like 1.1. Mm-hmm. K's per nine, sitting around 10, not walking a lot of guys. Mm-hmm. ERA 1.75. Not that like ERA is the best way to measure a bullpen arm, but
when it's that good, it means something.
It means something, you know. You don't want a bad ERA no matter when you're pitching. I'll tell you that for free.
Yeah.
I don't know what else you want to say about Anthony Bass. He's been very valuable, quiet.
I know that there are some people who have brought up the five home runs that he's given up in a Toronto Blue Jays uniform. And to that I say, there is something to be said for a guy who, when they're up by two or three runs, are going to go out there and challenge the hitter. Yes, he's given up five home runs. All of them solo, by the way.
He has five home runs.
I would far rather see a guy come out and challenge hitters than go out there and walk guys, right?
So he has five home runs he's given up in Toronto. Those account for all five of his earned runs.
Yeah.
So there you go. I mean, it's the same mentality that Jordan Romano has, right? Like, a narrative is depending on how you look at it, right? Like, does he struggle with giving up the long ball, or does he challenge a guy? And yeah, for me, like, I want to see Jordan Romano throwing hard and challenging a guy. I don't want to see him pitching around the corners, dipsy doodling, because that's when you get base runners. That's when you get into trouble. So yeah.
Last thing on Anthony Bass before we move on. I know We're probably overdoing it on the Bass stuff, but he was touching 97. You know, for a guy that everyone talks about his slider and his secondary stuff, he can throw a fastball and he can locate a fastball, and that's what you're after in those back end of the bullpen guys. All right, okay. Let's move along here. I know Mantis Toboggan is in chat right now. We mentioned it off the top, but it is worth mentioning again. Gabby Moreno playing all over the field yesterday. He played and started the game in left field. He played catcher in that first game. started in left in the second game, was moved to second. He played third. He was moved all over the field. He looked good, a real athlete. An exciting thing to see the Blue Jays testing out where Gabriel Moreno can get some time in this roster, especially if for whatever reason they decide to go the route of keeping all three of their catchers moving forward into 2023. I don't think that's going to be the way that this rolls out. I think that there is going to be some catching decisions made in the offseason, and that we're probably going to see one of Jansen, Moreno, or Kirk moved, but time will tell, and they don't have to do that. Moreno is athletic enough that they can probably find spots within the lineup to put him if that is the route they decide to go.
Should we talk to Teoscar Hernandez?
I would love to talk to Teoscar Hernandez because he is getting hot at the right time, man.
He sure is. I've got his stats. Let's pull those up and we'll have a look here. Teoscar Hernandez still struggles in the outfield defensively at times.
He definitely makes Blue Jays fans do the big gulp sometimes, right? You see that high fly ball. He's made some really good defensive plays, too, in the last month. But there's always that grabbing your collar like, oh no.
For the casual fan, what would you describe as being a good OPS to have?
800. If you're above 800, you're above average for sure.
Okay. And we'll start with this then before I pull up the stats. On the season, Teoscar Hernandez, OPS, 807. Good hitter.
Definitely.
What would you say elite hitting is?
I think if your OPS is 850, you're an elite hitter.
Okay. So looking back over the course of the last 2 weeks, again, small sample size, but we know he's capable of it. And this, I think, just speaks to the fact that he's heating up. This isn't Raimel Tapia that we're looking at a 2 week sample size and going, look how great he is, right? But Teoscar, this is a 30 home run guy. This is a guy who is heating up when we need him to heat up. His OPS over the last 2-3 weeks here, 1.133. 1,100 OPS.
Wow. That's insane.
Batting average of 340. Slugging percentage of 766. He's got 5 home runs in his last 12 games. That's a 68 home run pace over 162. Look, if Teoscar can be this guy for the next month.
Yeah.
Jays can do a lot of damage.
Jays can do a lot of damage, especially with Vladdy not looking like the 2021 Vladdy. Not that he hasn't been contributing here and there, but he's definitely not, even on a hot streak right now for 2022. So if Teoscar can pick up some of the slack from Vladimir Guerrero Jr., that is going to do nothing but help this team out. I know that there's talk going on right now in the chat about what happens next year. Obviously, Teoscar Hernandez is on an expiring contract. He's got 1 year left before he's an unrestricted free agent, which is going to be in that 2023-2024 offseason. He's going to get paid. He's probably a $20 million a year guy. He's going to be 29 years old going into age 30 season when he's an unrestricted free agent. The other expiring contract in the outfield is Lourdes Gurriel Jr. And Lourdes had a career year this season. The big knock on Lourdes is he's always been incredibly hot and cold. What I do love about Lourdes, and I've said this many times, is that when he is hot, he has the ability to carry this team. And not every player, when they're hot, can do that. Lourdes, we've all, as Blue Jays fans, watched him put this Toronto Blue Jays team on his back for months at a time. Think about back in July when we were all like, why is nobody hitting? Lourdes was hitting when no one was hitting. Lourdes is also on a very team-friendly contract. He's going to make $3.1 million next year, and that is because there is no arbitration when it comes to Lourdes, because he was an international free agent. Mm-hmm. Teoscar next year, however, is probably going to make $15 million, which is still below what his priced would be on the open market, it's still probably a bargain for what Teoscar brings to the table. However, I think it's going to be really interesting to see what happens with these two. One of them is probably going to be moved come the off season, and I think it's going to really depend on which teams they're dealing with. Of course, Lourdes is going to be more attractive to teams that are low payroll teams, because $3.1 million is an incredible amount of value for a guy that's going to hit around 300. Lourdes doesn't have the power that Teoscar has.
But Teoscar, by the way, when we talk about Teoscar's power, 32 home runs last year, 16 in the shortened 2020 season. So through 50 games, he hit 16 home runs. What does this team do with
26?
He's at 25 right now.
25?
What do you want to see this team do then with the outfield position this offseason? I mean, we're getting way ahead of ourselves.
Yeah.
But let's do it. That's what we're good for. Is Teoscar Hernandez a Blue Jay by the end of next season?
My guess is Teoscar is the most likely to be moved because of the money. Lourdes is also offering something to this lineup that it doesn't have, which is a guy who hits for average and gets on base and is a doubles machine. Not that there aren't guys on this team that hit a lot of doubles. Bo Bichette and Vladdy Guerrero, to name a couple, are big on doubles. But Teoscar is a little bit more redundant. And if you are going to bring in a left-handed bat, it is the easiest to do in the outfield. You know, there are guys like Brandon Nimmo that are available. Mm-hmm. You know, of course, there's options that aren't on the free agent market as well. It's going to be interesting. I don't particularly wish to see either of them leave, but if the Blue Jays don't win the World Series, then they are going to need to take a good long look at the way that this roster is constructed, how many days at DH you need to give guys like Kirk and Springer, and the lack of a lefty bat has been screamed about all year. It was screamed about all last year, and I think that it is becoming more and more of a priority.
Yeah, I mean, I'm with you. Teoscar has a great bat. I've never been the biggest supporter of Teoscar. I'm not about to start right now. I'm glad he's hot. This is great timing. I hope it stays up for another 4 or 5 weeks. But the defense is subpar. Is that being too hard on him? I don't know if the effort is subpar, but it looks subpar.
I think it's safe to outfield. I think it's safe to say that it's below average. I mean, I haven't looked at the defensive metrics or anything like that, but just the eye test says that Teoscar is definitely a below average fielder. He had worked really hard on it, but there's still those glimpses where you're just like, oh my God, how did that one get away? But also, like Taco Time mentioned it earlier in the chat, in the month of September, I've been very impressed with Teoscar's defense. He's made some big time catches. I know the one that stands out to me is the clinching game for home field advantage, game one of that Orioles series, where it's raining and he ran and tracked down that ball in right field and made a jumping catch at the wall to basically save two runs. So he has the ability to make big plays.
Yeah, he does. But the thing that always gets me with Teoscar and Lourdes,
mental lapses,
to a different degree, like Lourdes, anything in the air, I have confidence that Lourdes is going to get to and is going to field it cleanly. But anything on the ground, I'm worried about it going through the wickets and he's turning around, chasing it to the wall. With Teoscar, It's those moments where it's the hard hit ball into the corner. And in his mind, he's going, well, it's already a single.
Yes.
I just need to scoop it up and toss it in. And meanwhile, that single has now turned into a double. Or it's already a double. There's no point, you know, really going hard here. It's just a stand up double. Meanwhile, Randy or Rosarena's turning it into a triple. Right. And that sort of stuff drives me nuts. So those aren't the kind of plays that are so glaring as like Vladdy putting it off the top of the wall and, you know, watching and admiring it, right? But it is, it's those things, man, that adds up over the course of a season. And I don't
maybe
like it.
Maybe Teoscar is an average fielder. You know, like I get so down on him because I watch him every day. So, and it is frustrating to watch those mental lapses where you're like, is he completely checked out right now? Because it sure looks like it. But should be interesting to see. We'll wrap things up here right away. Let's end on the MLB rankings of lineups for playoff teams and pitching. Did you have anything else to add before we do that, Adam?
Nope. Let's go.
Okay. Well, thank you very much, everybody in the chat. It's been, you've all been very interactive today. It's great. Okay. So MLB just released today their rankings of lineups. A lot of stats went into this. I read the article this morning, and of course it's all about weighted runs created plus and, the average OPS of the team and the amount of home runs for the team and just, you know, the slugging percentage, all of that sort of thing went into this. So the MLB has, or I should say MLB has it ranked as number one is the Los Angeles Dodgers. Number two are Toronto Blue Jays. Number three, the Braves. Number four, the Cardinals. Number five, the Yankees. Number six, the other New York team, the New York Mets. And then seven is Astros. Eight is the Phillies. Nine, the Mariners. 10, the Padres. 11, the Guardians. And 12 is the Rays. And we talked about this a little bit yesterday, Adam, when we were doing our rankings. The Tampa Bay Rays ranked at the bottom of our ranks. But the one really impressive thing about that Tampa Bay Rays team is the versatility, how they can massage a lineup every single time they face a pitcher to benefit them the most, right? Like, they've got guys that move all over the diamond. They can put a lefty in here. They can put a righty in here. They've almost got splits for the way they align their infield and outfield, which is an incredibly impressive thing to be operating with. So even though the Rays rank 12, don't sleep on the Rays. And I think all Blue Jays fans will tell you that. You look past the Rays and you're going to wind up eating it. So I will end on pitching rankings, which almost goes the other way. So number one is the Houston Astros. Number two, the Los Angeles Dodgers, because the Dodgers are just that good. Number three is the Atlanta Braves. Also, both of them, they rank three on both those lists. So the Braves are a scary team, and I think we all are aware of that after watching them win the World Series last year. The Cleveland Guardians are in at number four, and a very scary pitching team that a lot of folks are sleeping on. I know that in our Scott and Adam Suck at Betting segment last night with our partner Betstamp there, we
Guardians are for real. They could do some damage.
Put some money on the Guardians, and you could win some money on the Guardians. Number five is the Rays. The Rays are always good at pitching. Number six, the Mets. Seven, the Yankees. Eight, the Mariners. Nine, the Cardinals. 10, the Phillies. Our Blue Jays in at number 11 out of 12 playoff teams for pitching, and the Padres rank 12th. Go Blue Jays, go! Super excited for tomorrow. Of course, that game gets going at 2 Mountain Time, 4 Eastern. A big tip of the hat to everyone in the chat. Thank you so much for joining us today. We're going to have our regular scheduled Friday show tomorrow. We're going to run it a little bit early, so we'll be live at 9 a.m. tomorrow. Thanks again to all the Patreon. I know Adam's got the list right there ready. I'm definitely not throwing him under the bus. He is so ready for this.
I'm not scrambling at all to pull the list up. Look at me. I'm ready to read the list. Would you believe it? Patreon.com/thewalkoffpodcast. Kyle, Joey, Patrick, Wyatt, John, Dunedin, Bob, Michael, Sarah, John, Rashid, Joshua, Jeremy, and Ian. Told ya I had the list ready. We'll see you guys tomorrow morning. Cheers.
Later, gang. Cheers.
Thanks for listening to the Walk Off Podcast with Scott Belford and Adam Mack.
with a new episode every Friday.
Osborne with a drive. Cheese and crackers. Shows to pitch to him. Wrong move.
Thanks for listening.